Hi, this is Brenda S. Tolian, writer of Blood Mountain from Raw Dog Screaming Press, and you are listening to HP Lovecast Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 58 of the HP Lovecast podcast. I am Michelle Brittany, editor of James Bond in Popular Culture and the Bram Stoker nominated Horror in Space. I write on all things pop culture with a special emphasis on horror, fantasy, and spy genres.
And I'm Nicholas Stoyak. I'm a pop culture scholar of Peplum Films, Industrial Music, Horror Studies, and the editor of The New Peplum from McFarland. Michelle and I also co-edited Horror Literature from Gothic to Postmodern, also from McFarland.
In this episode, we will be discussing a one-shot comic book titled Dream Quest, created by Clay Adams and art by Mick Byers, and published by Fried Comics. Before we get started on our discussion, though, we'll answer what Dream Quest is, followed by a plot synopsis.
So, Dream Quest is a kickstarted one-shot comic published by Fried Comics in 2023. The story is by Clay Adams, who did Carmilla Unbound and Blazing Bride of Frankenstein. The art is by Mick Byers, who does Hollow, and Julio Rojas on colors. So, we here at HP Lovecast, we have a soft spot for Dreamland stories, no doubt because of the influence of Gary Myers on us. We've previously covered his stories here, along with the anthology New Maps of Dream, Kidge Johnson's The Dream Quest of Let Bo, and The Sword of Lomar from Swords Against Cthulhu, so we like our Dreamlands. This comic was on Kickstarter. It was a Dreamland-centric comic, and so it seemed like a fun text to dive into, so that's why we are here. And plus, we like talking about comics here on HP Lovecast as well. So what is Dream Quest about? Margot Carter is a Miskatonic alumni who works at a coffee shop by day, but tormented by crazy dreams at night. One night, she dreams of her ancestor, Randolph Carter, who charges her with opening a door with the silver key, which she finds the next day in her closet. While discovering the key, she is phoned by Herbert West III, who has shocking news. He has located Randolph Carter, who has been asleep and dreaming for 100 years. At the suggestion that he could clear her delinquent student loans, West is able to entice Margot to enter the Dreamlands with the intention to bring Randolph Carter back into the awakened world. Margot begins her own dream quest, finding herself naked in the coffee shop she works, with customers, friends, and co-workers laughing at her, then encountering a Hyperion warrior who pilots a rocket ship that then gets attacked by Thashagwa.
Glad you had that word, not me.
we've talked about that deity in one of the Cthulhu Deep Down Under books, but so Margot attempts to land the rocket ship, but it crash lands and transmorphs into a rowboat in a swamp. She rows to a cave which houses Randolph Carter, only it's not Carter, it's Nyarlathotep in disguise. He has plans to go to the awakened world, but he needs to unlock the door to it with the silver key and through Margot, who is the last in the Carter line. Margot and Nyarlathotep get into a melee, but she says the safe word Providence, and West yanks her back to reality. Only it's not Margot, it's Nyarlathotep, who pillow smothers Randolph Carter's body while Margot remains trapped in the Dreamlands.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun. Done.
Great, so, great plot synopsis, by the way.
Thanks. So, Michelle, general thoughts. What is your overall impression of Dream Quest?
I enjoyed it. Like you said in the intro, we don't get to see that many stories in the Dreamlands mythos. So, right away, I was definitely anxious to read this. I felt like it had a strong story. I thought the visuals were really quite good for being a little bit more of an independent comic book one shot. And yeah, I'm anxious to discuss this one. What about you?
I dug it too, except for the downer ending. I didn't see that coming. But after reading it, it's not surprising. But aside from the downer ending, because I like my happy endings, I enjoyed it. Like you, the writing, I think it was a clever, different take on Dreamland stuff. Kind of like when we read New Maps of Dream, where that anthology had radically different interpretations of the Dreamlands. And I thought the art's fine, especially with Margot's face. She has a lot of expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of, and we'll probably get into this a little bit more deeper, but it took me back to when we read Dream Quest of Let Bo. And there's some, I'd say, some overlapping commonalities between that. And I remember really enjoying that novella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. And I like you, I was thinking back to that story and just feeling like they did a very nice job balancing, you know, both authors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say, like, if there's a big difference between the two is Villette Beau had a bit more emotional stakes to it. You know, I remember, you know, at the end as she's being pursued through the caves and stuff, and there's the critter she saves. It's a bit more emotive bagging on her, but Dream Quest takes a way different approach. I don't think the emotion's quite there, but it is surreal, exactly like if you are in a dream. In fact, this story kind of, I think, eschews normal Lovecraft Dreamlands, which is a bit more sword and sorcery and fantasy. You know, there's a specific geography, and, you know, towns are here and monsters are there, and, you know, go to point A and point B and fight monsters. This one is way more psychotronic, where, you know, between panels, you know, settings and clothing and backgrounds rapidly changes. And I think that adds a different element to a Dreamland story that we don't normally see in a Lovecraft-style Dreamland story.
Yeah, I would say that that was one of the other reasons why I actually enjoyed this, was the fact that it took Dreamlands, it kind of built on what Lovecraft has put out there as a foundation. And then Adams went in there and really played in the sandbox. You know, seems to be familiar with other Dreamland stories out there, and then took it into a new, unique area. And I think that, you know, it's experimental, and I think that he delivered on that.
I think it forces the readers to really slow down in this comic because it's so rapid fire. I took, like, an example. There's, like, 4 pages right when Margot initially enters the Dreamland. So within 4 pages, like, her outfit changes, I think I have down 5 times in the span of 4 pages. So she goes from being naked to wearing a men's purple jacket and pants to wearing business pants and a tie and then wearing fantasy scale mail. And it's just super rapid fire. And it's because, you know, she's in a dream, but, you know, at least for me, like, when I dream, you know, it's a whole bunch of little, like, short vignettes that are kind of tied together, and I feel like that's the feel that it's going here. And you know, I think it forces the readers to slow down, take everything all in, or else they'll rapidly get lost and say, wait a second, she's on a rocket ship right now, wasn't she just at work?
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I think that, you know, being able to either reread, and I think in this case, rereading the comic, you know, there's definitely value in this comic that you can read it multiple times, and each time I think you're going to come away with something a little different. And then I do feel that if you are familiar with the Dreamlands and the mythos, you're going to get Easter eggs that are hidden in there as well. But it's not necessary that the reader know the Dreamlands in order to enjoy the comic. So I think that again, you know, Adams is able to kind of say it, both a newcomer reader as well as, you know, a reader that is familiar with the Dreamlands.
I think one of my favorite panels, which kind of sums up what I think the story goes for, is right after Margot enters the Dreamlands, and no, it's not the booby panel. It's the next page where Herbert West is in the Dreamlands, and he's appearing as the form as her cat. And the expression on his face is just adorable. But he just says, Dream Logic, run with it. And it's so matter of fact.
He's got a little smirk on his face. And I will say that I did like how the kitty was animated. I think also a little further in where they're falling from space in the rocket.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real close-up of Alfar. And it just, it catches all the wrinkles, the eyes, the shape, the ears. It's just... Yep, I'm like, yeah, that appeals to cat people right there.
See, I like the scene a couple pages before where she's holding him, what should be by his scruff, but it's not his scruff. It's his business shirt and tie. And his eyes are like kind of like half closed, glazed over. And I don't know. It's those like kind of little moments that help pepper the book. Now, you said cameos. And I want to bring that because I don't want to say a love-hate relationship of cameos, it's just that...
But you do.
I do. I think it's just, for the most part, cameos and Easter eggs, I feel, are not used very well in derivative Lovecraft work. We've seen it many times. I remember playing the video game Sinking City, you know, you're in a boat, and how many times do you drive by, like... Herbert West Apocathy, and you know, and we read a comic, I think it was put out by O1 Publishing, like, let's go to the Silver Key Inn, and you know, they're just Easter eggs and name borrowing without really adding anything.
Yes.
And and Dreamlands, it does a little bit of that. Like, for example, the cat, there's no reason to name him Ulthar. I mean, if you think about it, like, Margot's never been to the Dreamland. She's never been to that town. She can name her cat any other thing. So the only reason the cat's named Ulthar is because, you know, the writer said, let's name him Ulthar as an Easter egg. So that's the type of stuff I don't care for. On the other hand, if you are able to do cameos and actually integrate them into a story instead of just name dropping them, I'm all for that. Like, example... I think he's a big part of some of the dialogue I'll be bringing up here in a minute, is Herbert West the Third. I mean,
yes.
So he's not the original Herbert West. He's a grandkid of Herbert West, but so he's not just a name dropped name. He one, has an impact on the narrative, and two, he's like the kind of an opposite of his ancestor. You know, he's not into reviving the dead. In fact, there's a really funny panel where he's like, she's like, so you want to reanimate the dead? And he's like, that's not my field. And I'm like, okay, now we're doing something clever and a little bit of joke. You know, he's into sleep studies. And I think it's a nice take on that character to do something different. And I'd say one kind of other small cameo, which I like, it's so brief, but there is a scene where it shows a character in the foreground in a hazmat suit walking away with the Necronomicon. And normally I'd be like kind of groaning, but I mean, the Necronomicon there is a copy at Miskatonic, so it's not that far fetched. So that, I thought, is just a nice little, you know, foreground joke. But the Herbert West III, the Margot Carter, the actually using the Silver Key to do something with, that type of name dropping slash Easter egging, I'm for. So the story does that okay.
Yeah, and I would agree. I felt like what was integrated in there was actually integrated for a reason. There was a reason to have it, not just to name drop it and say, oh, here you go, for all of you who know the Dreamlands, here's your Easter egg. But I do want to say that if you do know about the Dreamland mythos, I think that you would be bringing a lot more content, a lot more luggage into the story, which would kind of flesh it out a little bit more for those that are familiar with it.
There's even a scene where Margot is in the Dreamlands and she starts like spatting off some of the towns in the Dreamlands and geographic features. And she's like, wait a second, how do I even know that? And I think that's kind of the good way to approach it, that, you know, if you're someone who's read a lot of Dreamlands, not just Lovecraft, you know, again, as we open the podcast with, there's a lot of other Dreamland stories. People take their own different takes and add to the geography to it. So people who know that stuff will be like, yeah, I know that's the places that she's bringing up. Or even if they don't, either A, this is Adams adding his own, you know, geography to the Dreamlands, or, you know, B, you know, new reader, all of a sudden they are in the same boat as Margot. They're just being pelted with brand new knowledge. So I am for that.
Yeah.
So this is a very, I'm going to say, like Dream Quest of Letbo, a pretty character-driven story. I think start with Margot, because she's our main character. As a side note, her name. Nothing wrong with Margot, per se, but if you've ever seen National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation...
Is there a Margot in
There's that? A Margot. It's Julie Louis-Dreyfus's character. She's, like, the yuppie couple next door. And there's, like, the scene where I think Clark Griswold, like, breaks something in his house and it causes, like, a sheet of ice to go through their window and it destroys their CDs and melts their carpet. And, you know, Julie Louis-Dreyfus says something like, why is the carpet all wet? And her husband, he's like snapping. He says, I don't know, Margot. And I don't know why, but as I was reading that comic, that kept popping in my head. And I'm like, go away, Christmas Vacation. You don't belong in Dream Quest. But to me, Margot, I think she's very likable. She's a little immature, though. And I think it's because she's young. I'm getting the feeling she's fresh out of school. She went to Miskatonic. I don't remember what her studies are, or even if it's given. It's probably not occult studies. But it's probably, you know, it's something that didn't land her a job quite yet, because she's working at a coffee house. But, like, her friends are kissing, and she's saying, ew, gross, get a room. I'm like, girl, you're in your early 20s. You're not 15. Come on. But she makes me think of... not that Ash from Army of Darkness is a very complex character, but sometimes he is. He's a kind of a reluctant hero. He doesn't want to be there, and sometimes he's a little cowardly, depending on what edit of the movie you watch. So she kind of makes me think of Ash from Army of Darkness, just without a chainsaw hand, that she's put into a situation that she doesn't want to be in, and she's more wants to get in and get out real quick. But I think one of her... best qualities is her facial expression. She has the best, like you were talking about the cat earlier. He does, but Margot just has some of the, like, there's this one early where she's in a robe. She's, like, looking to the left. It's not, she's not, like, sexualized or anything. She just looks kind of like, oh, there's something creepy over there. Another one where she's got, like, a bagel in her mouth going, you know, the typical scene that you see, like, in the movie Brazil when Jonathan Pryce is shoving toast in his mouth because he's in a hurry.
And, you know, the other thing to that is, like, her hair's in a ponytail, and, you know, us ladies, if we're in a rush, we will easily put our hair in a ponytail and get going. So that, you know, there's some attention to detail about, you know, the Margot and her behavior, because later, you know, her hair is not in a ponytail, it's let loose, and there's...
It rapidly changes, just like the dreams that she's in. But she's emotive. While I said earlier that I think Dream Quest of Letbo has more emotion, I think Margot is more emotive. Very mime-like, I guess, is a good way. And that's a testament to, you know, the art style in here to make her very communal. She has a lot of ew and surprises and aghasts I prefer that more than stone face in comics.
And I think actually, you know, with that observation, that does make sense, because there is places where there's a little bit more narrative and dialogue. So having some of those kind of is a great way to kind of break up some of that dialogue. So it's actually a pretty good technique. And being emotive, especially in a sequential art medium, really does work here.
It makes me also care for her more, because, like I said at the beginning, I wasn't the biggest fan of the ending, because, you know, I'm rooting for her. I actually am hoping that she was going to be able to grab Randolph Carter, bring him back to the awakened world, and everyone's happy. But as we know in a lot of Lovecraft stories, you don't get the happy ending. And, you know, to find out that she actually doesn't make it back, it's actually Nyarlathotep that comes back in her stead. But
spoilers.
Yeah. I said that in the beginning, but yeah, okay. Double spoiler. And that she's locked back there. Either she's dead, or she's just trapped in the Dreamlands with no easy way out. Made me sad, you know, because I cared about her, and I didn't want anything bad to happen to her. Now, I take a little bit of optimism, because we've read enough other Dreamlands that there are other very hard and difficult ways to get out of the Dreamlands. So the door is opened just not the doors in this book, pun intended, for her to come back. So I'll take a little bit of solace in that. But I was sad. I wanted her to make it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I felt like, you know, given her lack of knowledge, yes, maybe over time she would gain the knowledge and would be able to come back to the real world. But, you know, I think for a one-shot, I think that it concluded the way that it needed to conclude.
Right. It concluded in a, you know, Lovecraftian way. You know, the main character in Call of Cthulhu, does he make it at the end? Heck no. You know, so I get it. Our second character is, of course, Herbert West III. And he's different. And not just because he's, you know, he's not a carbon copy of the original Herbert West. He has his own kind of goals, but
I did feel, though, that personality-wise, there's still a lot of similarities.
Definitely.
With the original Herbert West.
He is blinded by his drive. It's just that his drive isn't to animate the dead, it's the sleep studies. And so he's very excited for it. I don't think he's quite maniacal as his ancestors, but he might become that way. So here's the deal. I think he's mostly supposed to be a good guy, but if you start nitpicking him, I think some layers come off. So for example, he says to Margot, "I can make your student loans disappear." Now, either A, he can really do that, and he intends to fulfill that promise. That's the good way to do it. And I think actually that's what the writer of Dream Quest intended. But it's the cynic in me, I guess. But B, Michelle, you and I, we have both worked back office accounting. We have worked with AR, AP, invoicing, payroll, accounting, and I know
someone's going to find that shit out.
A typical account manager, you know, they are empowered to do write-offs, you know, a small balance write-off of maybe $50 or less, because the time it would take, salarying time-wise, to, you know, research and collect all that stuff is probably way greater than what you can write off. Anything higher than that, you know, company varies on company, obviously. You know, there is an approval process. You know, you go to your manager and you go to your VP. Then I'm guessing that Margot probably has student loans in the six figures, because that's not uncommon now and it's very depressing. I don't think West can make that go away. And if he shouldn't have the permissions anyway. And if two, if he did, if the company is smart, in this case, Miskatonic University, they probably run enough aging reports. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking about work stuff on this podcast.
I'm like, wow, you just went to aging reports. I'm like, well,
but you see what I'm saying. I think the writers intend A, but the cynic in me, come on, it's a comic that takes place in a dream world. It's not supposed to be based on reality. But deep down, there's that bee in me that says Herbert West is just enticing her for his own aims and goals, and has no, he can't actually fulfill that promise. I hope that's not the case.
Particularly when he does actually reveal that he is a graduate student. So we know that his position in the financial department
is low.
Is low, and he does not have that approval process.
Yeah. But I also know there's enough movies out there. It's like, I will make your criminal record disappear. So I'll go with that. The film logic here, that you can snap your fingers and make someone's past go. I mean, come on, one of my favorite movies is Hackers, and that's one of the plot points is Hackers. But I think it just, like, the type of character West is, because there's other moments, like when he's in the Dreamlands as the cat, he is there to help Margot. You know, he doesn't want to, like, he's basically a guide for a little bit. And he does yank her out of the Dreamlands after she says the safe word. But at the other hand, he is hesitant. You know, he's like, oh, Margot can take care of himself. So there's enough gray area with that character that he's probably not as altruistic as he claims to be. And I think that's probably a little bit of his ancestor in him.
Yeah, I think that was what I was picking up. That even though he seems like he has her best interests at heart, at the end of the day, you know, as a graduate student, you are trying to find your way, and you are trying to find the paper that's, you know, going to you know, just be the subject matter that'll make you the expert that you're seeking to be in your chosen field.
And, you know, he does let that mask slip. He tries to entice Margot, like, think of what we can learn, the benefit to mankind. And he even says, even though earlier he says, that's not my interest, he says, you know, we could conquer death. You know, and again, I think that's a little bit of the shadow of his ancestor there, that what his true intentions are. Yeah, mm-hmm. Granted, yeah, at the end of the day, he's got a PhD to write, whatever it is, mm-hmm. yeah, for himself as well. And that's typical of Lovecraft's writing.
And see, this is, I think, another case in point where I think that Adams pulls in mm-hmm. that a character mythology or mythos and plays with it. Mm-hmm. And those who are familiar with Herbert Rust and Reanimator are going to pick up and read more subtext in there than a reader who may not be familiar with Herbert Rust.
And I would say both texts, not just the mm-hmm. original story, but even the movie, because
I was thinking the movie, yeah.
Because, I mean, let's just face it, anyone who thinks Herbert West is thinking of Jeffrey Combs, let's just be honest there.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But even in the movie, there's a sequence where not Jeffrey Combs, but, you know, his accomplice, you know, goes to the dean, and the dean's like, I'm going to revoke your student loans and stuff, you know, so there's that, even that threat back in the 80s, but now that I think of it, there is the...
See, that's another good little kind of yeah. pull-in.
I think, maybe this is a bit of irony, but it is funny, in the movie, that Combs, Herbert West, does kill the black cat and reanimates it and kills it again and reanimates it. But in this story, Herbert West III becomes a black cat in the Dreamlands. So I don't know if that's a little bit of karma or an incidental nod, but I'm going to go with it because, you know, a little bit of tied to the movie as well. And yep. that and the cat's cute. That's the other thing we identify with Margot. She's a cat parent, and we are cat parents here too.
Yes, definitely. So,
I want to throw this out too for this iteration of the Dreamlands. Is it made me think of going way back in the past when we read Lovecraft Country, where every chapter in Lovecraft Country was kind of a different style of weird fiction, mm-hmm. where it was one, not just a different character POV, but like there was a chapter where a person kind of teleported to another planet. There was another one where a group of guys like went to a pocket dimension in a museum to like retrieve something. And then there was a weird science one where it was like take a potion and become someone else. And like the destroyed lab was haunted or whatnot. It was all these different weird tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dream Quest has a little bit of that genre homage in it. And I say that because when Margot first enters the Dreamlands, shortly thereafter, she's in a sword and sorcery situation. There's the guy called the Dweller, who's also a carter, and he has a sword, and he's hacking away at things. But immediately after that, it becomes a sword and planet style, very old Venus pulp style, where it's like the really tall rocket ship and everything that you would see like in an old Edgar Rice Burroughs Venus style pulp. So from sword and sorcery to sword and planet to just normal Dreamlands, I think there's and also jungle pulp. You know, as soon as the rocket ship crashes, she's immediately on a rowboat in like this jungle swamp, and she's got like the safari attire on and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that kind of goes to the jungle pulp stories of the early century as well. So
I would think Call of Cthulhu, part of the story where they're in the swamplands as mm-hmm. well. So
I Cthulhu does make a cameo at the very beginning, but it makes sense. It's one of her dreams and he's in the background. But I think there's a little bit of wink and nod to the different types of pulp genres that Margot is, as she's hopping through the Dreamland, she's not just hopping through the dreams themselves, but different weird tales / pulp styles. And I like, in fact, I kind of wish there was more of that, but it's so rapid fire that I get it, but it would be cool that if those different genres had a little bit more lingering and that she could take something from each one to the next one.
Yeah, you know, I'm on the fence about that because, in a way, I don't want to say this was a negative to Dream Quest, but I did wish that it was a little bit longer mm-hmm. and that there was a little bit more time spent in those different mm-hmm. genres and kind of those different spatial times that she's experiencing rapidly, either, you know, from one frame to the next, or maybe from one page to the next. So to me, I kind of like, yeah, it would have been nice to have a little bit more, but at the same time, would that then mean that the comic itself would only be great for one read through? So it's just kind of finding that balance.
I would say that. Because it is a one-shot comic, but it's not like graphic novel length. So her quest, because this is a dream quest, does feel like fast-forwarded through, if I may. Which I think is one in service of the dreamlike nature of the narrative, but at the expense of, it would be nice if there was a little bit more dwelling on things. Because, again, it is so rapid-fire. Characters come and go super quickly. Some of them go super quickly that their legs and their metal penis turn into rocket ships to blast them off the page. That was an interesting panel. So it is that balance, and maybe it's not the best balance. I would say this is one of those stories where I'm left with, I want more.
Which is probably the best way to be, because again, like I said, I was kind of on the fence, and now I'm kind of thinking back to, there's reference to REM and when you're in your sleep state, and often your dreams are only like a couple of seconds. They may seem like they're really long, but in actuality, it's only like a couple of seconds, but it moves very quickly. So I think that, you know, is probably in keeping a little bit with the reality of what dreams are for us. When we have them. But I think it's a good thing to want more.
Yeah. You know, again, characters are likable and are multifaceted and interesting. You know, the story, it does begin in a little bit on the slower side. You know, she's at work talking about her dream and everything. And you could want either A, almost omit that, or B, expand it more. Because they actually bring in those characters very briefly in the Dreamlands. And I actually like that idea of the waking world before you go to bed, the stuff you encountered in the day will pop up in your sleep. And a little bit of that happens. And I would actually be okay to see more of that. So the blurriness of what's the awakened world and what's the Dreamlands is even more blurred. And so I think there's wiggle room here. And again, downer ending, but I think it's open enough that a sequel or a successor comic or something could build on all that stuff. This is a very foundational building comic. And side note, I know there's a prequel. It came with my Kickstarter. It's called Beyond the Wall of Sleep. I don't know. I actually haven't looked at it, but I think it's just a short prequel with other characters. So maybe that might
help. Oh, so like maybe not even the characters that are from this
story. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's focused on Randolph Carter and what he's doing and how he winds up where he is. I'm not sure.
Okay.
We'll have to take a look. Maybe a future episode. But I want more past. I don't want prequels. I want sequels. I want Margot to get back, dang it. And and back to the real world where she's armed with all this knowledge from the Dreamlands that she can fight Nyilathotep and whisk him back to his imprisonment where he belongs in the, you know, floating black pyramid of the cosmos or something.
Well, we spent a lot of time on the narrative. I think it would benefit to spend just a little bit of time on the art that was done by Mike Byers, and the colors by Julio
Rojas.
So, what did you think of the art?
See, I dug it. I mean, it's colorful. Usually you don't want that in a horror thing, I guess. But again, it's Dreamlands. And so seeing a variety of colors, like the frog god that comes down and looks very psychedelic. You know, there's explosions, there's, you know, crazy cosmic patterns in the background, there's rainbows, and there's a lot of surreal things, like when she takes the sleeping drug and all these like bubbles appear around her and distort things. And there's a lot of, I would say, playfulness in the art. You know, clear lines, very emotive, which we brought up earlier, especially with Margot's character. She's extremely emotive. I would say I'm also very appreciative of, this will come out weird, but I'm going to try it anyway. One, a lot of the Lovecraftian comics we read are from Avatar Press, and those are extremely graphic. You know, all of a sudden, Alan Moore's, you know, stories, you know, they're good, but, you know, there's a lot of rape. There's a lot of sex and nudity. There's a lot of extremely graphical violence. And not that those are right, wrong, or indifferent. I guess it was just refreshing to see Dream Quest not have all those. Yeah, there's like a couple scenes of nudity, but here's the thing. I buy a lot of Kickstarter comics, and the trend in Kickstarter right now is covers, and not just any covers. We're getting into like every cover has a nude variant of the cover, and then within that nude variant cover there's a virgin cover where it has none of the text or anything on it. And I think this comic, just, you know, the Kickstarter campaign only did one of those, so it was a little refreshing that there wasn't a 10 artist variants of boobs everywhere.
Yeah, it does seem like it looks like there was probably like 5 different versions. Mm-hmm. So to have only one that kind of, you know, plays into kind of that more, I'm going to say, trend. Raunchy trend.
The cover I have is an alternate cover. I have the one where she's in a green cloak with holding a sword with a lot of Shoggoth looking monsters around her. The variant of this is she has no top, and that's about it. And I just didn't care for it. I like this one. It was a bit more interesting. I don't remember what the original cover looks like. I think it's in the PDF, which I don't have in front of me, but I think it's like, it looks very giallo-ish of like her like floating there or something. I don't remember, but
so kind of like in her dream state or something.
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it, The comic is, it's not chaste, but it's not like over-the-top Avatar Comics, current Kickstarter trend style, where it's just very gratuitous. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what it needs to be. She pops into the Dreamlands naked. Yeah, is it titillation? Kind of, but you know what? How many times have people had that dream where you have to give the presentation and you're naked in front of everyone and they're laughing to you? That's what that is. That's a normal, you know, thing to have. It lasts one panel and then she steals some guy's clothes. So it's not gratuitous with its depictions or anything.
And in fact, that fellow that she takes clothes from, we see him fully nude.
Uh-huh, with his metallic penis.
Yes, with the metallic penis, which, you know.
But that's a joke from earlier, though, mm-hmm. from her friends that are a couple. The friend says, we watched Iron Man last night, and even though I have paid attention, I dreamt that my boyfriend had a big robo-schlong. And that's just one of those things that we said earlier, as we saw kind of some blending of the real world into the dream world, that's one of those instances. She's mm-hmm. dreaming of her best friend's boyfriend's Iron Man penis.
Yeah, kind of out there, but, you know, it is Dreamlands. But I actually really liked the art. I thought mm-hmm. it was really clean. It was mm-hmm. polished. It looked very, very professional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just because it's a Kickstarter does not immediately say that it's not going to be good art, because that's not what I'm trying to say. But I just
But there really are a feel... fair amount of Kickstarter comics out there that lure you in with the lurid cover, and the inside is, oh,
completely different. And here we have consistent art from the cover to what you get inside. I really like that that Byers really runs the gamut with regards to his visual techniques. Like, we start out and we have throughout where we have the traditional panel layouts with the appropriate amount of white space around for borders, to the point where he's like pushing images off the page. You're bleeding off the page. You're oozing off the page. So many of the images, you know, become really bold and saturated with color. And then at other times when it still has color, but he's brought the palette back. He's muted up the colors, you know, because it's nighttime, and he brings in some really nice shading. And yet he's very good with experimenting, like on the panel with the kind of bubbles with mm-hmm. the dream state starting, and the contortions and the, you know, forced perspectives and things like that that just really work. And so he really does run a gamut. It keeps it really, really fresh.
Well,
and I think it does help with when you go back through and you reread it, it's still fresh because you see some other detail.
Well, just to go off what you're saying, because you're 100% right. In the Waken world, the panels, I mean, there's some creativity there. They're stacked and, you know, put in interesting positions, but they're all rectangular and square and logical. You know, there could be just a standard four panels on a page, or they're kind of stacked a little bit, but they all make sense. It's when she enters the Dreamlands that it becomes blurred. You know, panels become diagonal, they become blobbies and floating and disembodied and bled together. So the paneling definitely helps, you know, divide the Waken mm-hmm. world from the dream lands. And I think that's a very appropriate way to go. It's a, you know, if you're not paying attention to it, I think you still subconsciously pick mm-hmm. off on, you know, my reading experience is different now that I'm in a different spot in this comic. So I think I 100% agree that's a, it's a clever way to mm-hmm. depict the presentation of the different realities in the story.
Yeah, and I think Rojas is a great, you know, complement to the art and what he brings in color-wise. We've got edits by Frank Pintores, you know, also does a nice job. You know, it's very seamless. Even the lettering works well. It just really coalesces into a very nicely done, nicely told story. And I would recommend this to anybody that has an interest in Dreamlands and would like to read, you know, more of that kind of stuff. Then I definitely recommend this comic.
Definitely step above a lot of the other Kickstarter comics I've been plucking up lately. This was a nice surprise, not just for, you know, comics published that way, but, you know, also for Lovecraft derivative works. Again, maybe a little biased. We like our Dreamland stories here, and in that way, this comic, it didn't disappoint us. It makes us wanting more. We like the type of Dreamlands it is creating. It's similar yet different from other ones, so that way we can have our cake and eat it too. We get the old ideas we like, we get the fresh new ideas we like. I dig Margot as a character. I care about her. I'm sad that she's gone at the end and hope that she comes back. So people at Fried Comics, you know, do a second graphic novel, come on.
And we'll review it. And I would say on that note, we're going to take a quick little musical intermission, and then we'll be back to wrap up with a thank you and also what we have coming up in our next episode.
Welcome back. We'd like to thank Brenda S. Tolian for providing this episode's opening bumper. We had the pleasure of interviewing Brenda for our transmissions program last September, where we discussed her book Blood Mountain. She's currently working on a new novel, a collection of poetry, an anthology, a nonfiction book. She is busy! So many good things are coming for Brenda, and we wish her much continued success.
For our transmissions episode this month, we'll be interviewing speculative fiction writer and poet Beth Cato about her new book, 1,000 Recipes for Revenge, Chefs of the Five Gods, #1. And we'll also be interviewing Tom Starita regarding his new horror suspense novel, Delta. This episode will drop on the last day of May.
Now, we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our website is hplovecast.com, and of course, you can email us at hplovecast@gmail.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and feel free to explore our archives. Consider supporting us by purchasing our books. We each have Amazon author pages with the links to all the books that we've either edited or contributed to with individual essay chapters.
And we've got new ones coming.
That's right. So. Lots of new stuff coming for us. If you've listened to our episode last month when we celebrated our 3 years back.
Yes.
We're busy beavers. But the other option is if you want to give us a dollar or two, we also have a coffee account. So a link to that is also in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening, everyone.